Are you the Christ, the Son of God? Ego and me. Yeah, right. And then he volunteers. And henceforth you'll see the Son of Man coming in the clouds and seated on God's right hand. Now, if Son of Man means nothing, if it just means a man, the high priest should have said this. Yeah, right. Son of Man. You're the Son of Man. I'm the Son of Man. We're all the sons of man. Can we get back to the Son of God thing? No. When Jesus says, henceforth you'll see the Son of Man coming in the clouds and sit on the right hand of God, tears his garment, you're guilty of blasphemy. You're dead. You're dead meat. Yes. Got him. Now notice on this title, he calls himself both Son of Man and Son of God. But my point is, if Son of Man is only a man, why did he commit blasphemy for saying he was a man? He's claiming something very special. Ego on me. I am. And I'm going to sit on God's throne. All right, let's take a look at the next one. Son of Man. It's taught. Now, layer would, this is pretty technical, and I'm going to move on unless you have questions. But critics believe there are layers in the gospel text. And the more layers you have, the more trustworthy it is. Son of Man saying is found in every layer in the gospel tradition. I've already told you, nobody calls him the Son of Man. No epistle calls him the Son of Man. Therefore, Son of Man was a title that Jesus used of himself. That's a title of deity. Okay, Son of God. Notice I'm using Mark a lot. Why? Because that's the critics' favorite gospel. All right, so I'll play their game. Mark's in my Bible too. They don't want to give me John. They're going to use Mark. Fine, let's do it. Let's use Mark. Now, I do use Matthew once because this verse in Matthew is very well attested. We can talk about reasons if you want, but there's some technical reasons why Matthew 11:27 is accepted. But Jesus says there, no one knows the Father but the Son and those to whom he will reveal him. Mark 13:32. If you look this up, you might say, you sure you gave us the right reference? Jesus said, that day or hour, no man knows, no angel knows, not even the Son, but the Father only. Say, wait a minute, he's saying he doesn't know something. Well, we can talk about him not knowing something, but the point is he calls himself the Son. Mark 14:36, he calls God Abba. That's Aramaic. And Abba is a familial term that you call your father. It's a familiar term for father. And lastly, notice the Mark 14 phrases here too, because the high priest says, are you the Christ, the Son of the Blessed One? So the high priest gets him to agree to both Son of God and Son of Man, and these are divine titles. Now I ask you folks, what's Dan Brown say? Nobody made him, nobody thought he was divine until 300 AD. What are the dates of these books? I'll use the critics' dates, okay? Critics' dates. In fact, I'll do it this way. Here's the cross. Here's the cross. Critics put Mark at about 70 AD. They put Matthew and Luke about 80 AD. That's plus 40. It's plus 50. They put John about 95 AD. You know where Nicaea is? Nicaea would be outside this room. That's the council. That's 300 years later. But these books, Dan Brown says, nobody called him deity for 300 years. Really? Well, how come Mark's doing it 40 years later? How come Matthew's doing it 50 years later? And these are critics' dates, not our dates. It's their dates. Doesn't look to me like anybody waited for 300 years to say he claimed that he was deity. Okay, now my first point was, even if I use only the critics' arguments, Jesus thought he was deity. How about in the early church? I'm going to make an argument that goes like this. It's a pretty radical argument. I'm going to say, you don't have to wait till the Gospel of Mark. If this is the cross, this is ground zero. We have statements that Jesus was believed to have been God. You know how soon after they come? Right here. We have comments in the 30s, AD 30s. So really? We don't have any books from the 30s, do we? No. This would be a good trick question. We have some New Testament sources from the 30s, but we don't have any books from the 30s. What am I talking about? Well, let's go ahead and go to the next one. I'm going to talk about the early church. There's a bunch of texts in your New Testament that appear for the first time in those books, like Romans 1, Philippians 2. But they predate those books. I know this is kind of hard. Let's see. I'll give you an example. You write a paper. You're writing a paper. And you quote from a source that was written in 1930. I'll tell you what. Let me make it exactly analogous to this. You're writing a paper in 2006. But you're writing from a source that was published in 1970. 36 years ago. And you footnote that source. And if you quote it, and it's a long quote, you block the quote, right? And you footnote it. Footnoting is a lost art today, but you should footnote it. If you don't, it's called plagiarism. But here's my point. Your paper is written in 06, but your source is 36 years before that. Y'all with me? In the New Testament, the New Testament writers cite sources that are 30 years and 40 years earlier than the books. You go, how do we know that? Well, sometimes the authors tell you. They don't tell you the date. We have to do work on the date. But Paul says twice, he says, I delivered unto you that which I also received. You might say, and? But listen to what he's saying. I gave you what I was given. It's sort of like saying, I'm passing on to you what my professors taught me. Anyway, in the New Testament, critics agree to this. In the New Testament, there are dozens of little passages that date from the 30s and 40s. They're earlier than the Gospels. And in those passages, we find things like this. One of them is Romans 1, 3 and 4. And Paul says, Jesus was shown to be, he's talking about the resurrection. And he says the resurrection proved that Jesus was three things: Son of God, Lord, and Messiah, by virtue of his resurrection from the dead. Did y'all get that? The resurrection showed he was the Son of God, the Messiah, and Lord. Oh, yeah? When was this written? 300 A.D., like Dan Brown says? No, it was written about 55 A.D. in Romans. Now, here's Mark from plus 40. Romans is plus 25. But that comment in Romans goes back here because Paul's quoting somebody, right? That's a footnote. Here's a better one. Philippians 2, 6. Your pastor may have told you, may have heard this. This was an early hymn, they think. This was sung. Now, could somebody read Philippians 2, 6 for us? You got it? Good.
Who being very nature God, do not consider equality with God something to be grasped.
Okay. Who being in the very nature of God did not think equality with God is something you should grasp. Looks like he's trying to say he's not God. He didn't think he should grasp after the deity, God's deity. But now your translation does a good job with that. You said being in the very nature God. If you read this in old translations, here's what it says. He was in the form of God. For us, form doesn't mean anything special, right? The form of a house might be a wood frame, but it's not the whole house. But in Greek, the word form means nature, just like your translation says. What is it again? What are those words? Nature? He was in the very nature God. When was Philippians written? Here's Mark. Philippians is before Mark, but this hymn was sung way back here. And it says, he was in his very nature God. Wait a minute. I thought we didn't sing hymns like that until 325 A.D. No, they're doing it right away. You see my point? Nobody took a vote and invented the deity of Christ in 300 A.D. They were doing it in the 30s and 40s. And we have it in the epistles in the 50s. We have it in the gospel starting around 65 or 70, Mark. Okay, I give you a lot of other verses. Oh, by the way, here's some other little issues with Dan Brown's novel. He says Nicaea came 4 centuries after Jesus. I don't want to be mean, but the guy's not counting. Nicaea came 3 centuries after Jesus. Jesus is about 30 A.D. Nicaea's 325. To be exact, it's 295 years later. He says 4 centuries. So this guy wasn't a history major. How was the vote on Jesus' deity? He says it was close. And before that time, Jesus' followers didn't teach he was deity? All right? Let's take a look. Next. Tebing says, you know, you can go ahead and keep this up here. Let me make one comment. The vote. Dan Brown says the vote was close. You guys know what the score, what the vote was at Nicaea? This is the close vote. About 300 people. Final score, 300-2. That's a close ball game. Final score, 300-2. I'd say that sounds like overtime to me. Only the other guy scored 298 points in overtime. He says it was a close vote. A historian, he isn't. All right, let's move on. Folks, this is one of the main ideas you'll hit today. A friend of mine who surveys liberal websites, he's a grad student, and he surveys liberal websites, he says about 90% of them have a claim like this one. Scholars almost never say this, but popular critics do. They'll say that we copied all our beliefs. All right, so Jesus is deity. Remember, his first move was to say Jesus wasn't deity. Now they say, well, all right, so he was deity, but we copied it from ancient religions, from people who believe their gods were deity. Here's Tebing again. Quote, the pre-Christian god Mithras was born on December 25th, died, was buried in a rock tomb, and he was resurrected in 3 days. By the way, the books that are coming out, they make these kind of claims. Now notice the claims themselves are contradictory. Was Jesus deity or was he not? Oh, no, not until 300. But then this one says, well, yeah, he was, but they stole it from somebody else. So first they have to make their mind up. But we already did the one that said it waited until 300. No, it didn't. It's the 30s. Well, okay. Well, so it's the 30s. Y'all copied it from somebody else. You copied it from somebody else. Mithras was born on December 25th, died, was buried in a rock tomb, resurrected 3 days. Then Tebing says, hey, and by the way, we get the same thing in Osiris, Adonis, Dionysus, and Krishna. All right. Let's talk about this general theme that says Christianity was copied from other religions. Okay? No ancient mystery religion, that's what these religions are called, mystery religions. No ancient mystery religion has a resurrected hero prior to the second and third centuries. Someone says, well, I just want you to tell me, yes or no. Some of those religions have a god who rises from the dead. Yes, they do. See? I told you. Yeah, well, when's the earliest one? Second century A.D. What's the second century A.D.? What years? It's 100 years, right? It's second centuries. But what 100 years is it? Second century. Yeah, it'd be 100 to 199. That's the second century. The oldest god for which we have a resurrection story is Adonis, and it dates from about 150 A.D. Now, when is Jesus' resurrection proclaimed? Right away. And every critic will grant this. Every critic will tell you the resurrection of Jesus was taught immediately. Well, you tell me, what's earlier, 30 A.D. or 150 A.D., Adonis? Who comes first? Who's first? Jesus is 30 A.D., Adonis is 150 A.D. Who comes first? Jesus. Who copied off whom? By the way, the second best one is Attis, A-T-T-I-S. And Attis is 250 A.D. Well, give or take, he's only 200 years after Jesus. Okay, great. But who copied off whom? There's no resurrected God before Jesus. By the way, those guys, they never even lived. They never even lived. Krishna is the only one in Brown's list who may have lived. And the book, does anybody know the book that talks about Krishna? Somebody might pass it out to you in an airport one time. I had a guy of this faith try to pass it out to me in an airport. I got a free book. Besides, that means nobody else could get that book since I took it. And you know the name of the book? In the 60s, it was really popular reading. There's a short name for it. It was called the Gita. The full name is the Bhagavad Gita. It's a Hindu book. But even if Krishna lived, this book is about 500 years after Krishna. Let me ask you guys something. Would you believe what a book says 500 years after the person was born? That means if the book is about George Washington, it's not going to be written for another 250 years. How do they know who George Washington is? That's how far the book is after Krishna. And he did not rise from the dead. So this is just bull. Whoops. There's one more up there. There's one at the bottom. There you go. Oh, I got you. Okay, you're ahead of me. Good. All right. Brown says, talking through Teabing, nothing in Christianity is original. Oh, really? All right. Let me tell you several things in Christianity which are original. Let's go ahead. Thanks. Jesus is the only founder of a major world religion who taught he was deity. Are you surprised? No other founder of a major world religion said he was God. You go, really? Buddha? Buddha is probably an atheist. Besides, we don't know what Buddha said because the earliest writing of Buddha came about 500 years after Buddha. We're not talking prime history here. Well, how about Confucius, a Lao Tzu of Chinese religion? They weren't even theologians. They were ethicists. They taught some good ethical things, but they never claimed to be God. They didn't even talk about theology. Oh. Well, how about Muhammad? Well, you guys know Islam. If you compare anyone or anything to Allah, that's the unpardonable sin. So if you call Allah, if you call Muhammad the son of Allah, you're a heretic. That's heretical. They don't claim Muhammad is a son of Allah. Well, how about Judaism? Well, you tell me. Is there anybody in the Old Testament who claims to be deity? So there are no takers. Jesus, the only founder of major religion. Don't forget, what's Dan Brown say? Nothing in Christianity is unique. And yet Jesus is the only one who claims to be God. Second, he is the only founder of a major world religion who said that what you do with me determines where you spend eternity. He's the only founder of a major world religion who said, there's a kingdom coming, and you can live forever. But what you do with me determines whether you go there or not. So nobody else said that? Well, a lot of people said, I'm gonna tell you about the path, the way. But only Jesus said, I am it. Everybody else said they had a path. But nobody else said, I am that path. Everybody else said, I'm going to teach you something about it. Jesus said, you're looking at him. Thirdly, he's the only founder of a major world religion who was raised from the dead. You say, well, that's a big faith claim, isn't it? Andrew, are any of these folks with us on Sunday morning when I do the resurrection? You are? Folks, come Sunday morning and the evidence for the resurrection, you say, I got to admit, somebody may claim to be God and not be God, but if Jesus is the first one, that's pretty cool. Somebody might say they're the path of salvation, but saying and being might be two different things. Somebody might believe he was raised from the dead, but come on, this would be the greatest miracle in the world. How do you know he was raised? Please, come and think of your best objection, and let's play Stump the Professor Sunday morning. I'll talk to you about evidence for the resurrection that's convinced a whole generation of scholars. More critics today believe the resurrection than those that don't. Something's going on. But he's the only one who rose from the dead. You say, aren't you a little bit prejudiced? No, listen, you're missing my point. Ask a Muslim if Muhammad was raised from the dead. Ask a Buddhist if Buddha was raised from the dead. Confucius, Lao Tzu, Moses. They don't even teach that. Jesus is the only one where we have a resurrection, and we have good evidence. Okay? Here's the conclusion of part one. We're even a few minutes early. The denials by Dan Brown's character, Teabing. He says Jesus, neither Jesus nor the early church taught the deity of Jesus. That's patently false. Totally false. He said Christianity copied the gospel from the ancient mystery religions, pagan religions. Absolutely false. How can they have copied? Christianity's the first one. And they denied the uniqueness of Jesus. These are completely unfounded on historical grounds. If you want to talk evidence. Now, somebody could listen to me and say, yeah, but you're talking with the faith of a Christian. I'd say, you weren't listening. I've been using verses that critics allow because these verses can be established according to the way critics argue. I'm using their verses. They're in our Bible, but they're verses they allow. It's like me saying to you, do you think Homer's Iliad is a truthful book? Well, I don't know, but there's a few truthful things in it. It's sort of like that. Well, then let's talk about the few truthful things in the Iliad or the Odyssey. It's like that. Critics are going to say, well, I'm not going to give you the New Testament. Well, what will you give me? Maybe about 100 verses in the whole thing? Fine, I'll use your 100 verses. Oh, what do you know? I got everything I need. You see what I'm saying? That's the argument I'm using. If the Bible's inspired, we've got it all. And by the way, the topic for the next time after break here is Mary. Was Jesus married to Mary? And Scripture. So you talk about Scripture briefly. But if the Bible's inspired, we've got it. If the Bible's not inspired, but it's a good historical record, we've got it. And if the Bible's not inspired or historical, it's just a report with some true things and mostly false things, we still got it. Because the things they allow, the verses they allow, prove the point we're making. Okay? So, we're a few minutes early, but rather than stop and ask questions now, my next lecture is shorter than this one. And so do some thinking and talk among yourselves during the break. And let's bring up your hardest questions after we do the next one, which is on Scripture and on the question, was Jesus married?